This is the AusMed Handover Podcast. My name is Darren Wake, and today I want to talk about drugs.
There's aspirin, adrenaline, and also aminophylline, amphetamine, adenosine, augmentin, and rifampicin, amoxicillin, penicillin, heparin, and warfarin, and estrogen, progestogen, and caniston, and chloroquine. There's bendroflumethiazide, and also cyclophosphamide, and metoclopramide, acetazolamide, tropicamide, loperamide, amiloride, and cyclizine, and furosemide. And if you're up the duff, then you'd best avoid thalidomide. There's lithium, fluoxetine, and also amitriptyline, paroxetine, digoxin, GTN, and azathioprine, miconazole, atenolol, and also chloramphenicol, and if you want to overdose, there's always paracetamol.
Well, not all of those drugs, just the ones that get you high, both the legal and the illegal varieties, and to be more specific, those drugs that nurses like to use to get high. Why? Well, because there's a ton of good quality research out there that's been done with very large numbers of nurses over a long period of time that tells us exactly this sort of information. And most everyone has a vested interest and indeed a fascination with this kind of data. You'll find similar research out there looking at the use of recreational drugs by doctors, dentists, pilots, policemen, firemen, ambulance officers, and soldiers. Basically, everybody wants to know what the statistical likelihood is that the person to whom you've entrusted your life and well-being is stoned off their tree. What I'm talking about here are the drugs that are widely described as recreational, not medicinal. Although many of the drugs I'll be talking about do have well-established medicinal uses, I'm really looking at the drugs that nurses take purely for the buzz they provide. I'll be including both the legal and the not-so-legal varieties, otherwise the podcast just wouldn't be fun, and we'll be looking at who takes what, how much they take, how often, and if certain drugs are favourites amongst certain speciality areas of the profession. To wrap up the episode, I'll be looking at how nurses compare to the population in general in the getting high stakes. But first, let's review those wonderful chemicals that are included in virtually all of the research I've been looking at today. Caffeine. Coffee beans are the second most shipped commodity in the world after crude oil, and that's because they are packed with caffeine, which is the world's favourite recreational drug. It's unregulated and legal in every country on the planet. It's easily accessible to young and old, and it's an extremely effective central nervous system stimulant. Nicotine. When my local shop opens up their tobacco cabinet, it looks like a pathology museum to me. All those pictures of cancerous mouths and soot-filled lungs. Nevertheless, it doesn't seem to deter anyone at all from buying cigarettes, and the big tobacco monopolies seem to be enjoying a steady and unrelenting growth in their customer base across the world. The magic ingredient of cigarettes is nicotine. It mimics the action of the neurotransmitter acetylcholine in the brain. It's highly addictive, and it's made from the manky green slime that oozes from the armpit of the devil himself. Alcohol. Whilst most of the drugs we'll be talking about here taste about the same as if you licked a bedpan, alcohol is different, and that's because a massive industry has arisen that produces flavourful and aromatic vehicles of various kinds to deliver the buzz we love so much in social situations. Alcohol does a gazillion things to your body, all of them bad, but the reason it's been so popular for about 5,000 years is that even in modest doses, it increases the serum levels of dopamine in your brain, and that makes you feel relaxed, chipper, and automatically doubles your attractiveness to the opposite sex. It's a very, very efficient social lubricant. Marijuana. Ganja, hooch, dope, weed, woobly. Whatever you call it, it's probably the driving force behind the popularity of M&Ms today. It's chock full of a compound that I can't pronounce, but will be abbreviated hereafter to THC, and its popularity lies in the fact that it heightens mood, promotes relaxation, stimulates your appetite, and makes you find some really, really stupid things funny. antihistamines. Well, who'd have thought? Antihistamines are an apparently popular recreational drug because they produce a sedative-like effect very similar to Valium. And I thought all of those kids down at the skate park were sucking on bottles of Benadryl simply because the pollen count was up. Over-the-counter analgesia. Most people take these for the codeine, which is converted into morphine by the liver. Personally, I would think wine would taste better, give you a nicer buzz, and in sufficient quantities will kill off your liver just as effectively as all that unnecessary paracetamol. Tranquilizers. Tranquilizers generally include all those drugs with the PAM suffix, temazepam, diazepam, oxazepam, flunitrazepam, and, bucking the trend, clorazepate. They're all psychoactive drugs with anti-anxiolytic and hypnotic qualities. Hallucinogens. No one will remember Abby Hoffman, but he was the chemist who first synthesized LSD back in the summer of 43 and had his mind set free, as the poem goes. He consequently made an entire career out of evangelizing the drug as a cure-all for all the world's ills. Generally speaking, other popular hallucinogens aside from LSD include magic mushrooms, nitrous oxide, ketamine, henbane, angel's trumpet, and uncured tobacco. And I've literally just given you a shopping list. They all cause hallucinations, altered perception, dissociation, and subjective changes in consciousness. Amphetamines. Amphetamines are central nervous system stimulants. This category includes crystal meth, which has been around since 1919 and is nothing new. And it also includes cat, speed, and benzodrine. Narcotics are incredibly problematic for the recreational user because the only way to access them is to steal some or buy some from a high-risk source. The most popular recreational narcotics are the opiates morphine and diamorphine, or heroin, and their various derivatives. Whilst both morphine and diamorphine produce roughly the same effects, heroin is far more popular as a recreational drug because of the intense euphoric rush it produces as it crosses the blood-brain barrier soon after an injection. Both drugs are highly addictive. Ecstasy. Another popular recreational drug, ecstasy, or MDMA, that's right, I can't pronounce the word again, was first synthesized in 1965 by a chemist called Alexander Shulgin, who really didn't know what to do with it, so he used to drop it into his friend's martinis to loosen them up at his after-work cocktail parties. It's a serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine-releasing agent and reuptake inhibitor, and that means it brings about a sense of euphoria, well-being, and an intense empathy for those around you and sustains that sense for a very long period of time. So now let's talk about what the research shows about who takes how much of what and how often. A lot of the data I present today has been extracted from the Nurses' Health Study. This is a very large and ongoing study looking at the long-term health and lifestyle habits of over 238,000 female nurses. It's an absolute goldmine of data. I've combined some of the findings from this study with other large research projects that have been published over the last couple of decades to give you my blended version regarding what our vices are as a profession. So let's get started with nurses and caffeine. We all intuitively know that nurses chug coffee down like champions, but what does the research tell us? Well, large studies across several professions show that nurses are at the absolute apex of professional coffee consumers. We consume far more coffee than any other profession on the planet, and some studies even lump us into a group they describe as professions dependent upon caffeine for productivity. Around 95% of all nurses report a lifetime of caffeine use, and 43% of those in the 18 to 24-year-old age group were most dependent on their daily joe, and around two-thirds of them drink 2 cups or more a day. The findings from the Nurses' Health Study showed that those nurses who drank more than 5 cups of coffee a day increased their risk of an early death by 2%. But that's irrespective of other drug use. If you isolate people who don't smoke from that group, but they do drink coffee, if they drink 5 or more cups a day, they improve their long-term mortality rate by 12%. Nicotine. Given there is virtually irrefutable and overwhelming evidence that smoking tobacco will almost certainly lead to a terrible, choking, painful, horrible death, some nurses still elect to smoke. In fact, the percentage of nurses who smoke is around 12%, and that's consistent across several national studies, except in China, which has some really paradoxical statistics, and maybe shines a light on just how Chinese nurses perceive themselves as role models for the public they serve. Currently, the Chinese lead the world in terms of the percentage of their population that smoke or consume tobacco-related products. In fact, 30% of all Chinese adults smoke. However, Chinese nurses are rejecting this trend, with only 2.6% of the profession smoking, a percentage substantially lower than the population as a whole, and significantly lower than nurses in Europe, Australia, and the Americas. Outside of China, the percentage of the profession who smoke far exceeds the percentage of doctors who smoke, but the total number of nurses who smoke has decreased by almost a third over the last decade, and nurses are butting out at a rate almost twice as fast as the general population. Not one single study has shown conclusively that the stresses of nursing are a trigger factor for taking up the habit. Alcohol. When I was a shift working nurse on critical care, I used alcohol a lot. Rarely in social situations, mind you, and not to ease the pain, as the cliche goes, rather it was to stop my mind from racing after my evening shifts, when no matter what I did to relax, my mind would keep running over various what-if scenarios related to my evening's work. Two glasses of red seemed to calm it down, and that got me off to sleep. The percentage of the profession that drinks alcohol on a regular basis sits between 83 and 95%, but that regular might be as little as once a year. However, the percentage of nurses that use alcohol regularly over a 30-day period averages out at around 66% globally. So what percentage of the profession boozes to a dangerous level? Australian and New Zealand studies show that around 14% of all nurses drink alcohol on a daily basis, which may not be a bad thing, but there's a very strong correlation between the number of hours worked in a week and the amount of booze consumed. That is, the harder you work, the more likely you are to drink to excess. Marijuana. Around 37% of nurses have used marijuana at least once in their life, with around 1.3% of all nurses using marijuana on at least a monthly basis. Antihistamines. Despite the fact that I can think of plenty more pleasurable ways to get high than chugging down a bottle of Benadryl, antihistamines are apparently a moderately popular choice amongst nurses as a means of getting high. With the percentage of nurses who have deliberately taken an antihistamine for a recreational reason over any 30-day period being around a surprising 30%. Over-the-counter analgesia. Easy to get hold of, and easy to get hold of in bulk. The availability, ease of access, and attraction of the codeine-containing compounds sold as popular analgesia make it an attractive target for use and abuse. Given that most nurses have at least a rudimentary knowledge of what excessive paracetamol can do to a liver, the perceived benefits of a codeine buzz must far outweigh the risks. At least 80% of the profession will have used over-the-counter analgesia in any 30-day period, but that's mostly for legitimate reasons. Around 2.6% of all nurses will have sourced over-the-counter analgesia just for fun. Tranquilizers. Once, benzodiazepines, which are the most common of the tranquilizers, used to be unregulated and sit in big baskets on the drug trolley. It must have looked like a lolly shop to an addict. Those days are long gone, mind you, and if you want to abuse them recreationally now, you either need to doctor shop or steal them from ward stock. Overall, around 12.5% of all nurses have used a benzodiazepine at some point in their life, and around 2.1% use them recreationally on a regular basis. Interestingly, between 7 and 10% of those nurses that use benzodiazepines couldn't stop using them even if they wanted to. Hallucinogens. Amongst the general public, around 7% have tried an illegal hallucinogen at some point in their life, and around 0.1% imbibe on at least a monthly basis. However, only a scant 3.4% of nurses have experimented with this class of drugs in their lifetime, and the incidence of regular use is virtually nil. I imagine that those nurses in the 3.4% were dissuaded from further experiments by the talking bedpan they came across whilst they were tripping out. Amphetamines. I would have thought that amphetamines would have been a popular drug in the days when they were legal. They would have been a bit of a godsend on night duty, that's for sure. Amphetamines were for many years provided to military personnel on night shift, right up to and including the invasion of Iraq, and I'm sure they might still be in use now. Nurses seem to like them, and around 12% have tried them at least once in their life, with about 0.2% using them on a regular basis after that first trip. Narcotics. It's not easy to source a narcotic. The high level of addiction, the issues of trafficking, and the effect on local economies are so severe that most jurisdictions place exceptionally stiff penalties on illegal possession. Nevertheless, 16% of the profession have used narcotics recreationally at least once in their lives, and despite the risks, around 2% still use them on a regular basis. Ecstasy. Currently, amongst the general public, ecstasy is the second most popular illicit drug of choice for the first-time drug user under 25. Around 12% of all nurses have tried ecstasy at once in their life, and around 0.8% use ecstasy on at least a monthly basis. All right, now let's look at the really interesting research data. What specialties use what drugs? 42% of nurses who work in the specialty of oncology were found to have some or all of the legal and illegal drugs we have discussed in this podcast over the last 30 days. Psychiatric nurses run a close second, with 40% having used some or all of the drugs on our list, with emergency and adult critical care nurses running a close third at 38%. Bear in mind, these were very large studies. In terms of specific drugs, emergency and pediatric critical care nurses have the highest incidence of regular marijuana and cocaine use, followed closely by the specialties of adult critical care, oncology, rehabilitation, and psychiatry. When it comes to the highest incidence of cigarette smoking, psychiatric nurses rule, followed by emergency and then gerontology nurses. Pediatric critical care nurses have distinguished themselves by being the specialty least likely to smoke. Emergency nurses were found to be 3.5 times more likely to use marijuana or cocaine than other specialty nurses, and oncology and management staff were found to be twice as likely to engage in binge drinking. Prescription drug use and abuse is similar across the specialties, and the use and abuse of the drugs by specialty nurses correlates exactly to the percentage of physicians using the same drugs. Overall, nursing regulatory bodies estimate that around 6 to 8% of all nurses suffer from a drug or alcohol problem. However, this does not mean that those nurses are not competent to practice. Rather, most of these users manage the issues of their addiction in the privacy of their own homes, and it does not affect their performance at work. That is, they report to work straight and sober. It's only the most severe cases that come before the boards, and they are very small in number in every country on the planet.
I love you.
So, the big question, how do nurses compare against the general public? Well, I have to say that despite the extreme stresses of the job and the ready access nurses have to a lot of the drugs we've been talking about, we are largely a representative microcosm of the population as a whole. We are certainly no worse than the general public in terms of our vices, and in many respects we are healthier and even conservative in our outlook. Compared to global averages, the data suggests that amongst users, nurses generally imbibe less frequently except in respect to alcohol, where 66.2% of nurses are likely to drink regularly, compared to 54.7% of the population as a whole. 28.5% of all adults smoke, compared to 12% of all nurses. 4.1% of the public have used marijuana regularly, compared to 1.3% of nurses. 0.6% of all adults have used cocaine, compared to 0.3% of nurses. And 0.1% of all adults use hallucinogens regularly, compared to virtually no incidence amongst nurses. So there it is. That's the end of my podcast about the favourite recreational drugs of nurses. I hope you found the episode interesting, enlightening, and maybe a little bit frightening. Thank you for listening. Many thanks to Adam Kay and Amateur Transplants for permission to use the drug song. Adam is a doctor and a very fine comedian, and his work can be found on www.amateurtransplants.com. And Adam will be speaking to us in one of our future episodes about the value of gallows humour in medicine and nursing.
Let's get this party started.